These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.
Nope, we're recording. That's how we do things around here. We have to stop. We have to stop.
We have to stop. We have to stop.
We have to stop. We have to stop. We can't keep going. We have to stop. Quinn and I were just in a class, in our lovely workout class. Shout out to Danny. Shout out to Carrie's only got 14 more days left at this gym.
And gotta make him Danny, count.
Gotta make him count. I mean, that means my final class will be Friday. Anyway, Danny, in the class, So You Think You Can't Dance. Dancing our faces off, and he said, we have to stop. He kept going. He kept pulling people up on stage.
The class ends at 10 a.m., and he was starting a new song at 10:03, and then he was like, do this, do this. And he loves, like, just gyrating, and he's, like, gyrating so hard, and he's like, now do this. We have to stop. Now do this. Now do this move. We have to stop. And then he just, like, kept teaching and screaming, we have to stop. It was like he was possessed.
By the gift of music. I have to tell you, though, huge update today. I don't know if you noticed it. He knew my name.
Yes, he did, which is only weird because he also calls me Carrie.
Yes. Kind of amazing.
I think he calls me Carrie because he's like, what good are you except that you bring Carrie? I feel like if I said Quinn, he'd be like, no.
And then today he was talking to a woman, and he goes, Jasmine. And she was like, I'm not Jasmine. It was her first class. She didn't know the rules. And he goes, you know, when I call you a name, you answer. That's what he told her.
Yeah. I think he thinks
I think he thinks he made up my name as Carrie. I don't think he's convinced it's actually Carrie. I think he just randomly got it right.
Here's the real tea. He doesn't care.
He doesn't give a shit.
He just wants to say a name and for you to respond if it's eye contact is involved.
Yes, there was a man who he called his cousin last week whose name was Mo. This week his name was Jason, and it was not his cousin. And so I really liked it.
It's a comedy club.
I was so sweaty. It felt so good. It felt good to dance by Lamos. Let the rhythm take you over. By Lamos.
I can't believe how greasy my hair is.
It just looks shiny. It just looks shiny. It feels greasier than it actually looks.
I think it's because I used the lice shampoo this week because I was scared that in case the kids had lice and they were doing a lice check in school this week. So I was like, everyone has lice is what I decided. Based on no evidence for the record. So I washed my hair with lice shampoo, which I don't think actually cleans your hair. So that might have been the issue.
That feels weird that it
wouldn't clean
your hair.
Here's the news, though. They did the lice check yesterday.
Do your kids have lice?
They do not.
I don't remember having a lice check at my school.
It probably wasn't. I don't think they always do it. I think they do it at our school because it's an ongoing issue that is not getting solved to a point where this time they asked us all to give the school $5 and they went and bought treatment stuff. So if one of the kids had it, they sent them home with treatment. They were like, here, we're not going to trust you to go to the store and do anything, but you need to do this.
That's tough. Yeah. That's really tough. So last night, now I got to tell you, I'm feeling really good about living in New York. I'm feeling really good, even though I'm leaving tomorrow to go to a
shower. It's a city of opportunity.
It is, and I'll tell you about that opportunity, which was last night. My friend works in an assisted home. Wow, what is the word for this?
A halfway house?
No, it's an apartment, and half of it is like it serves previously unhoused people. It serves maybe like, and then it also serves half artists. So it's like part of it is funded by the Actors Fund. And so I've gone and like taught classes there, which is really fun. Like I got to teach improv to people who've never taken an acting class before. Like some really fun stuff.
That is.
And one of the things that he gets to do is he gets tickets for shows. And one of the residents signed up for a ticket to see Boop, the musical. And so I got a text going, hey, I have an extra ticket. Do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, I do. And so it was... I like magically had the night free and I could go see Boop the musical. It was fun. It wasn't like, nah, it's just lurking back there. Like we can't see you. Do you think it's helpful that he's going super slowly, Quinn? He can't hear. It's the aggressive, like if I'm just, it's like a little bit of like a dinosaur or Jurassic Park thing where he's just going. How much did you want to hit him in that moment?
100%.
100%. Pure rage. Anyway, so I saw Boop the musical. Fun. It was a fun time.
Well, tell me the highlights. Was there big numbers? Okay.
It started with a tap number. It felt like I might be critical on this. It's basically somebody was like, oh, wait, Betty Boop is now 100 years old. So it's now up for grabs for like anyone can use her as a thing. Right. What is the thing I'm thinking of? It's like free use.
Yeah.
After 100 years, it's free use. So I think like they kept talking about how she was 100 years old. So my assumption is that like the free use came up and they were like, oh, now if I were to tell you, imagine Betty Boop. But the plot of Barbie the movie, what is your,
okay, so
what
Betty
do you think would happen?
Boop real goes into the real world.
Yeah.
And becomes a human instead of a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And realizes that she's a sex symbol and has an adverse reaction to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was it. And it felt like very...
Wow. So I just said the plot, knowing nothing. That's
knowing
odd.
Nothing about Betty Boop. Like, and the big moment of her is be like, and I don't want to be chased around by men anymore. I'm not asking. And you're like, it was a very talented cast. Everybody did a great job. It was like its third performance on the Broadway. I'm very curious what people are going to think about it. It just felt a little bit... surface to me. Like I don't think they were saying anything that we don't already know. And then she ends up like meeting this kid. There's a little bit of a romance, obviously, and there's a mayoral race in New York, and the guy who's running is like a sleazeball, which felt so predictable. And also like I don't know if we need to have like, if I go to the theater for like escaping and joy, I don't know if I need a criminal politician feel like it's a little too close to home. Again, everybody was so talented. The woman who played Betty Boop was really, really great. I don't know what more there is to like uncover or mine. But again, I think it's fair use. But the amount of money that was in this production was insane. I think I wanted a little bit more. They even mentioned, there's a moment where they mentioned Jeff Bezos. She gets it confused and she's like, the man from the Amazon who has $148 billion. And you're like, okay. And everybody was like clapping and eating it up in a way that I was like, oh, this doesn't feel like any sort of real critique on wealth inequity and feminism. But of course, how can I expect a Broadway show to go there? I think I feel like whenever I see a show like that, I'm like, go further, go a little further, challenge it a little more, or surprise me.
If the plot is Betty Boop takes Broadway and that's what you're working with, like, make it weird, like, get wild, because why not?
Yeah.
Like,
but I think you and me have a similar taste where we're like, take big fucking swings, like, go further than what you think. And, you know, I mean, it's hard, I think, because I do also want to recognize one show is not going to solve the patriarchy or misogyny or anything like that. I'm under no illusion that that's the case.
I have news for you. theater as a whole is not going to do that.
Yes, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I think I just wanted to be challenged a little
more. No, the
more,
way you said it, though, you're
all.
Like, one show won't do that. Six.
But theater will.
Six might.
Six the musical.
Six the musical.
That's a fun one. I do like that show. That one is, you get some earworms. I didn't leave with earworms. It was like she went from black and white to color. The coolest thing I saw was at the top of Act Two, spoiler alert, the top of Act Two, the costumes were half black and white and half color. So the whole chorus, people were to the front or the back in a line. And so it looked like you were in a black and white world. And then they turned around and they were in color, including their shoes, which is my favorite part. So like the back or the front of their shoes, whichever side was black and white, it looked black and white. And then they turned and it was like yellow or orange.
That's fun.
The costumes were
cool,
very,
shoes.
Very fun.
Cool
I, shoes, cool costumes. I don't regret going. I'm glad I went. I did miss the jackal, which is upsetting.
Day of the Jackal was on fire last night.
Maybe I can get a download password and I could watch it while I work
for
today.
Sure.
This is what I wanted to tell you. I didn't tell you last week. So I'm really excited. My cousin is having a baby shower and that's why I'm going to Chicago. And I'm really excited to celebrate her. And I'm also really excited to give her this gift that I've been working on for a while, which is I made a baby book that's about her mom who passed away, my beloved Aunt Patty, who rules. And so I made her a book that she could read to her daughter that's all about her mom so she can read it to her.
I think it's really exciting. I think it's a really, really good gift idea. And I could tell you're excited. And it's always fun to give somebody such a personal gift.
I think the other thing, too, that feels really good. And by the way, I believe in registries. I believe in asking for what you want for a bridal shower, baby shower. Throw it on the registry because we know, like, let other people buy that shit for you.
Totally.
And it doesn't feel that exciting to get someone a gift like that. And so that's, I think, also why I feel excited as I'm giving a gift that I'm excited to give at a shower, which is something that doesn't always happen, if I may be so bold.
You may be.
Because sometimes you're just, you know, and I'm okay doing some errands for people. You know what I mean? Like, that's sometimes the shower. It's like, you can you buy this for me? Yeah, that's the deal. That's the bargain we've struck.
Yeah, I think it's really nice that you got her such a special thing. And you're going to have such a good trip.
I'm excited. I get to see my nephews. Oh, I'm so excited. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Quinlan Posner.
And I'm Carrie Ipama. And I guess we got to do this because you got to leave sort of soon. So I do have to go to... Tell everybody where you're going.
I'm going to a virtual event about human trafficking at 11:30, folks. So
please take notes.
Sure, I'm on time.
Please share with us what you've learned, because I think probably all of us here on the podcast, I think you're not going to get a more captivated audience about human trafficking, frankly.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's for people that work in the DOE, this virtual. So it's like it's through that. So it's like I'm not really sure, like, I think I'm mostly just interested in what capacity are you telling DOE employees about human trafficking?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. The intersection isn't obvious to me, so I'm really interested to see what the framework suggests. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to tell you something funny.
Please.
Today's Koa's first day starting his new club.
What's his
Zumba.
New club?
Zumba. He has after school Zumba. Isn't that cool? He's going to be exhausted on Fridays. He does after school Zumba for an hour, and then we pick him up and take him to gymnastics for an hour. What an intense Friday night this kid has. Party
I'm
animal.
I'm so excited for him to Zumba. There was this moment. I do want to actually highlight. There was this really fun moment that I want to, just because it made me really happy to notice, which was we were listening to music. Ko wanted to listen to Wicked, and I, of course, was like, I was really begrudgingly singing along. No, I was like fully committed to the bit. I was like really acting.
Carrie wouldn't put on a wig.
It was like I painted myself green. It was weird, but everybody.
It was over the top.
Ko was kind of staring at me, but he was engaged. Okay, if I dare say so. And so it was Griffin's turn to pick a song, and he picked the song Tatooine. What is the song?
We Love Tatooine.
We Love Tatooine, and obviously, it was a banger. I had never heard it. And so me, Quinn, Matt, and Griffin were up out of our seats, dancing our little faces off with Griffin. And he was really feeling the music. And Koa did this thing. He's seven. But he did this thing that I think all seven-year-olds do where he was like, I'm not dancing. And he sat in his chair and he was like kind of making a point of not dancing. But the everybody else kind of just was moving their bodies. And it was the sweetest thing to see because I saw him being like, I think I'm too cool to dance. Mm-hmm. And then like slowly it like lowered. And he ended up getting into it and laughing and dancing. And it was just like, I don't know. It felt like such a human moment that I wanted to highlight because I just loved it. And nobody challenged him to dance. Nobody asked him to dance. We just were. And I felt so, it was really a cool thing to be a part of because it felt so good to allow him to experience or want to join on his own. And have him feel the feelings of like, no, I don't want to participate and then end up participating. It was very moving to me to see that because I think I also recognize feeling like on your back foot and being like, I don't know if it's cool to do this, but I loved it. For sure. Do you remember that moment or did
I
that?
Do. No, I totally remember that moment. I think it's sweet you noticed it because I always think in those moments, like, I really hope that we have more years than we don't of like the reluctant eventual joining in, you know? Like,
yeah. And I think
he's going to get older and he's going to stay in that chair.
Yeah. But I also
but
like,
maybe not if he takes Zumba every week. Maybe he'll become like a Danny and he'll be like, I have to stop. I have to stop. But I can't stop.
But I can't
stop.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, who knows what a person is going to do? I think I also like, I do think that hopefully in like the way we grow and the way we're in like diverse communities and people do and say different things, like my hope is that it breeds like diversity and choice in that way. And that there's not, I mean, who knows? I think the older you get, but maybe like is how I'm so that's maybe an optimistic, idyllic approach. But I'm like, maybe like if we just keep modeling radical acceptance or being comfortable in one's own skin in front of kids, like just maybe they'll feel empowered. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, that is, I say it out loud and I go, no, junior high is junior high for everyone.
Like, that's just it. Yeah, who knows? I think it's especially hard in New York because like a lot of the schools are K through five and the one he's in is K through five. And I always think like, brutal. You make these kids like who are so uncomfortable in their bodies at that age also make all new friends. Fuck you. Like,
I know,
so
the six to eight. And I think in New York it's hard because you're not necessarily going to go with many people you know from your class. Like where I grew up, my public school was everyone from my elementary school went to the junior high. So I knew everybody I went to school with and then added more. And then, and as many of you know, like my best friends are friends from elementary school and junior high still to this day. So it's like, yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to take a minute and talk about that. Okay. So I got this information. I downloaded this book from the library called Four Shockingly True Crime Tales. And
wow.
And I was meaning to read it. And so I was like, okay, I'll read one of them or start one of them last night. I didn't get that far, but I got enough where I was like, okay, I think I know the story. And then I looked up. So I got it from that, Wikipedia, all that's interesting, and the LA Times. And I want to tell you the story of the Lobster Boy.
Oh, my God.
Introducing Grady Stiles Jr. He's born in 1937, and he is born with a genetic condition called ectrodactyly.
Say that three times fast.
Ectrodactyly. I'm going to have to say it a lot, I think. So it affects 1 in 90,000 births. This condition, it's a genetic condition, so it's passed down through family. So it's a condition where your fingers and toes are fused together, and so it almost forms like claw-like extremities. So in Grady's specific case, he's a junior, and his father had this as well. In fact, his father worked in a traveling circus or traveling carnival. And he was like, basically, he and his wife had kids hoping for a child with ectrodactyly because, again, they made a lot of money on the traveling carnival circuit, sort of being this like sideshow feature of the Lobster Boy. They've been having, this has passed down from their family since 1840. And when Grady was born, he was, I mean, sometimes it's afflicted in maybe one limb, two limbs, or how many extremities, they don't know. But Grady was pretty affected by this ectrodactyly. So his hands were claw-like, so it kind of looked like two figures, like a claw. They referred to him as Lobster Boy. And also his legs were affected, so he actually didn't have any legs below the knee. And so his toes and extremities were also. So he really, growing up, he learned to travel on his hands. He also had the assistance of a wheelchair, but he was very strong very quickly because he had to move using his hands, or using his arms rather. Mm-hmm. And so within this family, there was like a sense of pride of being born with this condition because you can continue on the family tradition. But it was not always smooth sailing. Obviously, being a kid with differences like that, Grady was looked at. He was mocked. He was bullied a lot in school. Mm-hmm. And he started touring with his dad and his family at the age of 7. But he was gawked at. He was made fun of. Like, people would, like, look at him like he was the sign of the devil. Like just, we think of bullying as so bad. I think he got it pretty, pretty, pretty darn bad. And so he continued on this family tradition of traveling, and that's how he made a living. And when he got older, or I think maybe his family, he was born in Pittsburgh, but mm-hmm. eventually there's this place in Florida called Gibsonton, which mm-hmm. is, I think, close to Tampa, although I'm not totally sure. But it's this place where a lot of carnival workers lived off season in sort of like vans, caravans, things like that. But it was this like safe haven. So there's this place in Florida where during the off season, warmer months, a lot of traveling carnival workers go and live there for a minute. And so sometimes when you're there, you'll see people training the animal acts or people walking around who maybe look a little bit different. Grady, like I said, was very strong in his arms, and because of how he would move. And I think that plus the bullying and possibly other circumstances of his upbringing had led him to do what we see a lot of bullies do, which is a lot of bullied people do, which is he became an aggressor and he became really abusive. In the traveling carnival, he was like a top performer. The hierarchy of it is he was well known, so I think that came with power, and I think he exerted it pretty aggressively. He ended up meeting his future wife, Mary Teresa, when she left home, and she was at first a ticket taker for the circus or for the carnival, carny life. She was a ticket taker in the carnivals, and eventually someone saw something in her and she was moved up and taught to perform. So she was like the electrified lady, so they would pretend to electrify her and she'd be safe after, or she would be in a box and they would stab the box with knives. And so that kind of increased her cachet, if you will. And mm-hmm. he ended up was like, oh, he can date her. And so the two of them started dating. They got married in 1959-ish, around that time, and they started having kids. Now, keep in mind, Grady would like to continue this lineage of mm-hmm. ectrodactyly. So the two of them start having children. Their first two children, sadly, do not live past 30 days, both of which passed away from pneumonia. Again, it's the 60s, and they are in a traveling carnival. And so the conditions are not good for that. And the children, that's what they believe. They don't totally know. Then in 1963, they have their daughter, Donna, who is born without the condition. And they recall at this time, Grady starts drinking a lot. And mm-hmm. Donna recalls being young and feeling afraid, or knowing that her dad was abusive. 6 years later, they have another daughter named Catherine, who they'll call Kathy. And she was born with ectrodactyly, just like her dad. And she had, it affected her hands and her legs. And again, the abuse is escalating and it's really, really bad. Mary would often tell the kids to go to their room when their dad came home drunk because she knew he would beat up the children. So she would try to protect him. The kids would hear him abuse their mother. At one point, they recall hearing a bang and coming out and seeing their father abuse their mother. And they had to scream to get him to stop. And he continued to yell even after he physically harmed her and she was passed out. Her eyes were rolled in the back of her head. And so the kids were hitting, like trying to get her to wake up. Eventually she was able to come to. She still did not leave him. Eventually in 1974, he kicked her out, which like is a gift in a lot of ways, right? It's like, mm-hmm. so that she had to leave. And she then, a friend of theirs who was also like lived nearby in this Florida sort of haven. So she, this man, Harry Glenn Newman, who had dwarfism, he was another performer in the traveling carnival, and he became to her rescue. And the, eventually the two of them would get married and she would have a child with him. Her son, Harry Glenn Newman, was born without dwarfism, and he would end up becoming the human blockhead. So he would like hammer nails into his head. So again, like this is a family business. We all know if they have kids, they're going to participate in the carnival. But what's wild is when she left him, she took the kids, and she didn't know it at the time, but he, Grady, had filed for divorce against her. And because she didn't receive the paperwork, all of the trial dates she never attended, it was uncontested. So by default, he was awarded full custody of the children. So Grady then took all of her kids. And at one point, she desperately wanted them back. And she contacted Grady and was like, please, can I have my kids back? And he's like, yes, meet me at this bar. And so they went and got drunk, or he got drunk, had like a shit ton of, he could just hold his liquor. He was just alcoholic. And at one point he was like, come back to the trailer to get the kids. And she went with her husband, Harry Glenn Newman, and her newborn child, little Glenn. And she gets to the trailer and her kids aren't there. And he pulls a gun on her and she's like, please just let me go. And so she goes. So he's, let's just say it, he's an asshole. So it's not that he gets custody of the kids and is like, I'm a reformed man. No, he ends up marrying a woman named Barbara. He abuses her. They have a child named Grady Stiles III, who is born with the same condition as his father and as his sister. The children live with him and they're terrified of him. Donna, the oldest, becomes the de facto parent. She is taking care of her young siblings. She's constantly trying to not get abused by her dad, which is an impossible task. And at the age of 15, she decides, you know what? I got to get out of here. I have to leave. And so she runs away and she meets this guy, Jack. And she's like, this is my ticket out. Jack and I are going to get married and I can leave my dad once and for all. This is going to be good. So she disappears. Her dad's pissed. He hires a PI to try to find his daughter. His daughter, Donna, comes out and is like, I'm here. And I'd like to get married and I'd like to leave the house. And Grady is like, no, you can't do that. I won't allow it. And she's like, well, I'm pregnant. So you have to let me. Even though she was a virgin at the time, she was lying about being pregnant. He's like, well, fine. I don't want you. I'll sign the papers. So they're getting ready for the wedding. And on the morning of September 28th, 1978, they're in Pittsburgh at this time. And she goes to the store to pick out a wedding dress to wear with her family. And she comes back and her dad's drunk in his trailer and she sees his wheelchair is missing and she can't find it. And so he's like, find the wheelchair. And so she's like going on a search with her family. And I think Barbara's there and he's like, Jack, you stay here. And so she's looking all around for the wheelchair. She hears bang, bang. She runs to the trailer. She sees Jack leaving, holding his chest. He collapses. He has been shot twice. They call the police. By the time the police get Jack and bring him to the hospital, he's pronounced dead at the hospital. It is no surprise that it was Grady who killed his daughter's boyfriend, fiance. At this point, though, the threat of first-degree premeditated murder, which is what they believe it is, they believe he hid his wheelchair so to get people out of the way so he could kill this boy. And he needs a defense attorney. The defense attorney that he meets, the first time he shows up to meet him, he's absolutely shit-faced drunk. And he's like, I'm not going to help you if you're drunk. But he knows the stakes are pretty high. Like, he could get the chair. He could die by hanging. Like, he could get the death penalty. So this defense attorney basically hears the story that Grady tells. Grady says that Jack bragged about sleeping with his daughter, about getting his daughter to marry him, was taunting him, was, and so it made Grady flip and shoot him. And this goes to trial. I don't know how much of the previous family's abuse is discussed at the trial, but I know his daughters testify against him. He ends up being convicted on third-degree murder, and part of what is said is no jail can hold him because of his condition, that no state institution can properly care for him in his condition. And so he is not sentenced to prison. In fact, he is put on house arrest and has 15 years probation. So he essentially gets no punishment. He's able to stay home with his family, and I'm sure abuse follows. At some point, he does decide to get sober. Barbara leaves him, or he divorces her, but that relationship ends. And in 1988, he ends up getting remarried to his first wife, Mary Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
The honeymoon period is short-lived, and eventually he starts drinking again, and the abuse comes back, and his family says it was worse than before. His daughter Kathy is nearby. She gets married. She has a child. And Mary Teresa is with her son, with Harry Glenn Newman, right? Mm-hmm. Glenn, the human blockhead. He's living with his mom and with his now stepdad, Grady Stiles. It is 1992, and Mary Teresa is 55 years old. Harry Glenn Newman is 20. And it's 11 p.m. at night, and they're like, you know what? We're going to go visit our sister nearby. Her daughter is sick. Our grandchild is, and Mary's grandchild is sick. And she's like, I want to go check on my daughter. I want to go check on my grandkid. It's 11 o'clock at night. The two of them leave. They leave Gary at home, smoking a cigarette, watching TV, getting drunk. Not long after, they hear a couple of gunshots. A neighbor does. And he pops his head out and sees a young man leave the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
When they look in the trailer, they see that Grady Stiles Jr., the Lobster Boy, has been shot and is slumped down, killed. He's been shot from behind.
Yeah.
The police come, and it's a really weird thing when the police start investigating or interviewing people, because they're like, nobody likes this guy. Everybody's like, what a shit guy. And in fact, his family is like, yeah, he's dead. Like, they're not that upset. In fact, when Grady Stiles Jr. is buried, or his funeral happens, 10 people show up, and none of his family are included in that. The funeral home could not find pallbearers to lift his casket.
Wow.
Like, this man is not missed.
Yeah.
But everyone who has a motive is gone. Or has an alibi, right? Like,
has an alibi.
Family's all together, but the police start looking into this.
But wouldn't they say, like, that they're all together even if they're not?
Yeah, but it was clear because they had, the trailers are pretty close together. So the person that looked out was like, I could tell that wasn't Glenn. There was an eyewitness that heard the bangs and saw someone leave and was like, I can tell you it wasn't any of those kids.
Got you.
And again, they all had people. I mean, they were all able to corroborate.
Mm-hmm.
But the police started looking into this, and they're like, but here's the thing. The two of them left at 11 p.m. at night to go visit a grandkid. That's not right. That feels weird.
The grandkid was awake? Yeah.
No, and they're like, the grandkid was sick. My grandchild was sick. I needed to go visit. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what's happening. So they start to investigate, and they realize that, in fact, there was a plot to kill Grady Stiles Jr. They discover that 19-year-old Christopher Wyant, another sideshow performer, was hired by his stepson, Mary Teresa's son, Glenn, the human blockhead, and maybe his mom participated, but they hired him to kill Grady for the price of $1,500. His goal was to shoot him in the back of the head twice, and boy, did he do it. Their motive was to stop the abuse his mother was enduring. So the two of them were tried. I don't think Kathy was involved in this plot, but maybe she knew. I don't know. She wasn't tried, not that I saw. But mom was tried for it, and she claimed the battered wife defense, and she was convicted on manslaughter, and she ended up receiving 12 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
His son, or no, his stepson, Glenn, was found guilty of first-degree murder and murder conspiracy, which carries a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Oof.
So it's this really very sad story.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of?
Tell me.
Did you ever read the book Geek Love?
No.
It's like one of my favorites. It's a really good book, and it's about a family where the parents are circus performers that travel on the road with a carnival. Mm-hmm. And I think their first kid just happens to have some sort of anomaly, and then they proceed to drug the mom whenever she's pregnant to try to cause their children to have something.
Oh, wow.
So it's all from the perspective of, I think, their daughter that's an albino little person. And it's from her perspective, and her brother Artie has flippers for hands and feet and becomes like, I mean, I won't give away the book, but
is it,
I will
fiction,
say,
or nonfiction?
It's fiction, and it is so good and so dark, and it's
Geek
a wild
love.
Ride. I can't right, recommend it rec. Enough. Geek Love.
I think I was just fascinated by this because, I mean, obviously a lobster boy. I mean, I think I did sort of want to, I was curious about that. I think there was a little bit of a like, oh, and you understand why those traveling carnivals worked, why those sideshows worked, is like people were fascinated at these anomalies. Mm-hmm. But the like real story is so sad that this family was being abused.
Yeah.
And yet like his wife was abused for years. Mm-hmm. And she got 12 years in jail, and
yeah,
his stepson. And I like, I can't even get over the psychology of being a stepson in this, to see this man when you know your dad was like a good guy. Like, it seemed like his dad, Harry Glenn Newman, like really took care of Mary Teresa and made her feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad. It's so sad. But I had to tell the story of the lobster boy because I was curious about it, and I thought you might be too.
Of course. I feel like my story will go well with it somehow.
Ooh.
My story is the story of Anatoly Moskvin, and this story I get from BBC, All That's Interesting, Wikipedia, and somebody's blog that they wrote about it. It's Danny Dutch is the person's name, and that was probably the best information. So that's www.dannydutch.com. He has some cool stuff there. So Anatoly Moskvin graduated from Moscow State University, and everybody respects
him.
There's
a Moscow State University. Why does that feel... Is that in Russia?
Yeah.
Why does that feel so American to me? To be like,
that it's
Moscow
State.
State.
I go to
yeah.
Moscow State.
Did you go to MSU, Michigan State? No. Moscow?
Oh, I go to MSU. It's a really good school, I guess. And he's a philologist and a linguist. Philosophy person, but you call it a philologist.
That's great. I didn't know that.
It's
I
a little
like
bit,
that.
That's a tongue twister in and of itself. Philologist. And he speaks 13 languages. He afterwards, so he's like an academic. He writes a lot of books, and he's this recluse living with his parents, never got married, never had a girlfriend, and picture like his own area of the home, and it's like dusty and filled with books is what I picture. And he's really into Celtic history. He's really into folklore. He's really into, what do you call it?
The
study of like funerals and death rites and this kind of stuff. And he's really into artifacts. So what happened is when he was very young and he was growing up, he and his friends would play in cemeteries. And at one point, he was in a cemetery and there was a funeral for a young girl. And somebody told him to kiss her forehead. Like somebody that is like, you know, honor your dead kind of meaning well, I'm sure. And was like, you need to go up and kiss her forehead. And they kind of pushed him down to like kiss her. And it was a very intense experience where he was like, it felt waxy. Oh, no. And it was like, I just had to do it because I was being told to do it. And then I like impulsively did it a bunch more because it was so weird. I like wanted to be in that moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then her mom is there, this like 11-year-old girl that's died. And you imagine she's coming from such a state of grief. God knows what she was thinking. I'm not totally clear on if he knew this girl. I think he was around the same age. And she grabs his hand and puts a ring on it. And she puts a ring on her dead child's hand, almost like they're married. Mm,
okay.
Like, I don't know what.
Okay. Like, there's a lot of feelings.
And
I
it's
have
like
right
his
now.
Memory okay. as a child memory. So I'm not sure yes. how accurate it is, but it was like very. It stuck with him. I think it's very upsetting and traumatic for him. And it also feels like this thing he has to think about all the time. And kind of made, it was part of what spurred this fascination with death mm-hmm. and dying. And he even says that it gave him a belief in magic.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I guess I read that you call it a necropolist. A necropolist. It's an expert on cemeteries. And in 2005, there was another academic, his buddy Oleg, is like, I'm going to commission you. What I want you to do is document all the names of the deceased over 700 cemeteries in Russia. And he's like, okay. So,
whoa.
So 2 years, he's just going through Russia and going to 752 cemeteries and he's walking. He's like walking each one because you imagine you don't like they're close
you
enough.
You can't.
And but at like, the end of the day, like you've traveled like a billion yes. miles on foot. So he's walking like a million billion miles a day. And he says, I don't know why he wasn't taking care of himself, but he's like, I drank from puddles and I slept on haystacks. And you're like,
get
what?
A water
and he's
bottle.
Like, one time I saw an empty coffin. That seemed like it'd be a comfortable option. I slept in the coffin. And you're like, bro, I understand the assignment, mm-hmm, but I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure he gave you money for a Nalgene.
Saving a per diem.
A
save the per diem. You know how we would do it. We would save the per diem, Quinn.
So, yeah, I guess that was like, you better be rich by the end of this. Then why does he still live with his parents?
Because he likes dead things. And he's like, well, this will
happen. Yeah, and
soon.
I think nobody knew who would do this but him. And he's kind of off. Like, people are like, he's very, very nice. There's nothing wrong with him. He's not mean, but he's eccentric. He's got weird vibes. He's a quirk. And Elvira and Yuri, his parents, are like, yeah, we don't know. He lives with us. We
his
love him.
His mom's name is Elvira?
Of course.
Wow. Okay.
He's pretty lonely. And at some point, he's a lonely guy.
Bad. Do you think he's lonely because he spends his days going to cemeteries where there's not like a lot of singles to meet?
Yeah, he hasn't it's met tough. Anybody. And then he's like, I think I want to adopt a kid. Like, I'd love to have a child. And he tries to adopt and he gets pretty far along in the process. And they're like, you don't have enough money. I'm like,
oh,
I guess you did need to drink out of puddles because even then they were like, no, you don't really have enough money to do this. And his parents are like, I don't think you should adopt. They were like, no, like you live with us. Now you're going to adopt.
They said it.
Relax.
Here's the thing is this the whatever it is was like, actually, his parents said you shouldn't, but we didn't want to like throw them under the bus. So we're just going to call it money.
Yeah.
Do you know what I
mean? And then. Well, so then he starts this doll collection at some point.
Okay.
And so he's got like, imagine like his area of the house is filled with all these life-size dolls.
Life-size?
They're big. They're not small. And he puts them in really colorful clothing and he paints their faces and some have boots and some have fabric faces and some have masks that he makes for them and he puts them all over. So they're like on picture you walk into his house and there's like dolls on the sofa, dolls on the shelf, dolls maybe, I don't know, in the chairs at the dining room. These are his friends.
I'm sorry to the laugh. That's, you know what? I really like
he
the
does
Lars
stuff with you. He talks to them. He watches TV with them. And that's his pals. Yeah. And then in Russia, in the area that he lives in, graves start to be desecrated. And yeah, and they're trying to investigate who's doing this. And I don't know why, but they said they Okay. And then there's a terrorist attack in Domodedovo Airport. That's a hard one to say. Domodedovo Airport in Moscow. There's a terrorist attack in 2011 of the airport. After that happens, Muslim graves start to be desecrated in his neighborhood. And people are like, we got to figure out who's doing this. And they go to a cemetery one night and they see Anatoly's the one doing it. And he's there.
No.
And he's not damaging anything else, but he's painting over the pictures of dead Muslims. And they're like,
"Not
you're cool. under arrest. You can't do that. That's fucked up. And we want to make sure that, like, maybe it was you earlier messing with some of these graves. So we're going to go to your apartment and gather evidence that it was you." So they go with him to his apartment and they are like, oh, they find photographs and nameplates that have been taken off headstones, and they find maps of all the cemeteries, and they're like, oh, this guy likes dead people. And then they see all the dolls, and upon investigating them, they realize they are not dolls. They are the mummified corpses of human children. Not only
my face.
But when they pick one up, it starts to make music. And they're like, what is going on?
Quinn, shut up.
They're like,
the fuck up.
What is actually going on? So they're like, Anatoly, what is going on? What the hell is going on? And he's like,
you wouldn't give me a
kid. I just felt really bad for these dead kids. I felt so sad about them. And I thought, either I'm going to figure out a way to bring them back to life with science or magic. But I knew I needed to have them at home to figure it out. And I'm an expert in Celtic culture. And I can tell you that Druids used to sleep on graves so they could communicate with the spirits. And I did just start out by doing that. I would go to bed on these young girls' graves at night to try to feel connected to them. But I'm getting on in years. And, you know, I'm in my 40s now. It's hard to sleep on a grave all night. It just seemed to make sense to bring the bodies home. So once I realized that was kind of my calling, I started to look at the obits, figure out if there was a young dead girl anywhere nearby. And if I felt like the obituary really spoke to me, I'd go meet with her by lying on her grave. And if that was true, we could take the next steps. And I also thought bringing them home is not a bad idea, because now they're at home. They're getting to know me. I'm getting to know them. They're in a safe space. They know that I'm here to take care of them. They're going to commune with me. And we just don't know what science has in store and if eventually there'll be a way that I can help them. But I want to honor them up until that point. And they're like, okay, what, you're honoring them, but like there's 29 of them, which is, seems like, you know, it's a lot of dolls. And not to mention, that's some of them aren't even in here on the couch or on the, you know, dining room. Some of them are in your garage, bro. And he's like, oh, yes, those are the ones I've grown to dislike.
What? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The actual. So
fuck.
What he did was he started looking up, like, how do you mummify stuff? And he'd dry the corpses with salt and baking soda, and then he'd stuff them with rags. And he'd put nylon tights over their faces and then make doll faces on top. He would even put buttons or toy eyes in their eye sockets so that they could watch cartoons with him. And then inside their chest cavities, he would put toys or music boxes so that they would make sounds, so that he would feel more like it's a back and forth. They can make music. One of them had like a piece of her own gravestone inside of her. One had a hospital tag with the date and cause of death. One had a dried human heart that he must have found and tried to put in. So he's like, it's like art projects almost. And he would sing to them and have birthday parties for them because he knew their birthdays. Their ages were like 3 years old to 25. Huge window. But if he just felt connected to these young women, one of them had lived with him for 9 years.
He lived with his parents at the time?
Correct. And they thought he had a creepy doll collection. So you can imagine how they felt when they found out they were dug up children that he turned into dolls. Not great.
Oh my God.
So he gets the moniker Lord of the Mummies or the Perfumer, which I think had to do with a Russian novel that I don't know the plot of, but obviously related somehow.
Need a lot of perfume for the smells.
Yes. Well, that was the thing. A lot of the neighbors were like, yeah, we smelled something when he opened the door, but we just thought it was like something rotting in the basement. We didn't know. Maybe he's a hoarder. And mom's like, I thought it was how books smell. And you're like, that's not how books smell, ma'am.
Oh, that makes me feel physically ill.
So he's called Anatoly Moskvin, the Russian doll maker. And he confessed to 44 counts of abusing graves and dead bodies. And again, he was like, I'm not a pervert. I'm not sexually interested in them. I'm interested in their spirits. I'm interested in communing with them. I was interested in keeping them safe. I care about them. The families are pissed. They're like, to have already been working through our grief and putting, keep in mind, it's people that lost
children. These are 25 years.
And like, it's so personal. It's so private. And to put your child in the ground and be visiting them and they're not there, and just to have their body like taken to some weirdo's house you don't know and played with, like, it's horribly upsetting. Ugh. One of the moms said, I still find it hard to grasp the scale of this sickening work. But for 9 years, he was living with my mummified daughter in his bedroom. I had her for 10 years. He had her for 9.
Ugh. Ugh. Oh, God.
And he says to the parents, you abandoned your girls. I brought them home. I brought them home and warmed them up.
Ugh.
They're like, sick. Can he stand trial? Let's figure this out. And they're like, not really. He has paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah, he should not be.
Yeah, he's not fit. So the Leninsky District Court says you've got to be indefinitely in psychiatric care. And he says to them when they put him in this care, he says, don't even bother reburying those dolls too deeply, because when I get out of here, I'm just going to dig them up.
Except for the ones in the garage that he started kind of being cool on.
The ones that he disliked. He's going to leave them in the garage. What a story.
That's insane, Quinn. That's an insane story.
Pretty wild stuff.
Valley of the Dolls. A dollhouse. There's like a lot of dolls.
Well, and it was like when I saw his moniker, I was like, what's this story about? Anatoly the Russian doll maker. And you're like, creepy. It's a guy that like makes dolls and lures children. It never in my wildest. And I start to read about this. And I was like,
How did you discover this?
The wizards.
What hole did you go down?
I think I was on a Reddit thing and somebody was like, you know what? I can't shake. Anatoly the Russian doll maker. And I was like, can't shake. Sounds up my alley. So I'm like, let's see what happened here. And I was like, I get why you can't shake that. A man living with a million dead children that he's mummified and put music boxes inside. I mean, it is the craziest thing I've ever
heard. It's also so wild to me that, like, how did he operate?
It's also just so wild to me that his parents have to like be so embarrassed that they're first of all, they have this
been living with this,
and they've been living with those dolls too. Not like, I think it was in a separate area, but it's still the vibe of like, you didn't know. And then everyone's really mean to them and they're totally ostracized from the community. You can imagine nobody like invites them over for tea anymore.
No.
They're like, those are the people that lived with all those dead girls. Like, so she even says they thought about killing themselves. Oh. Like, they're very depressed. It sounds
awful.
Horrendous.
Do you think that if he was allowed to adopt a child, that this would happen? So should we have let him?
I think that you shouldn't let an untreated paranoid schizophrenic adopt a child.
I think that's actually thank you. I actually land in the same camp as you, but I was kind of just testing and seeing.
I also just want to say, like, he says it's not sexual.
I don't know. We have no idea.
We don't know what the proclivity is. You know, thank God they're not living to experience whatever he's doing to these dolls, right. but right. it's still a vibe of with
it's
like,
the desecration.
I'm young
it's
and
the,
I
like,
kiss and I kissed this dead girl and now I want like, to be surrounded by them.
Right?
And
it's like he could have, yeah,
we just don't know. So, but to your question, all the more reason, like, no, this person shouldn't be around
children
alive
away
or dead
from him. Yeah. Keep as many children away from this person as possible. Wow.
Yeah.
That is so dark. Yeah. That is truly
darkly creepily.
Darkly creepily. Ugh. That makes me feel sick. I was hungry before and now I'm not.
Good. But this I'm is sure your new diet. Rally. We should always do this show before we eat and sometimes maybe.
No, I'll rally. You know me. Give me 5 minutes. I'll be back on the horse.
Yeah.
I can't stay down for long. Ugh.
Giddy
Thank
up.
You for telling me that story? Question mark?
Now you own that. Now your brain owns that information. So
thanks, Quinn.
Sleep tight.
What a pal. Okay, good night.
Don't let the dead baby dolls bite. So
they're not
scary.
Dolls.
They're not dolls,
it's
by the way.
That they're not dolls. Oh, good.
Also, don't look it up online because there's pictures of the dolls.
No.
And you're like,
no.
That's
not
a doll.
I bet he's, what does he look like?
Just shockingly normal.
That
just,
is offensive.
Yeah, you wish that it would be like
you
more of a,
have,
oh,
like,
of course that guy did
like,
that.
You want him
yeah.
to be like, you want him to look a little.
No. Oh, no, he's creepy. I'm wrong. I'm thinking of a different criminal that I researched this week.
Oh.
Some of the pictures, he doesn't look creepy, but a lot, he really does.
No,
oh, my God. This
looks,
one, he
oh,
way does.
No. Oh, no, I see pictures. Oh, no.
You're right. He has the eyes, actually.
It's the eyes. He has the eyes.
It's the eyes of a man that did this. And his house looks really like hoardery.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that. I could imagine there's some hoarding tendencies. You're probably not going to throw out the rotten fruit if you're keeping dead children around. I just can't imagine you're like comfortable parting with trash. That sounds like I'm calling these kids trash. I'm not. I'm just saying. I could imagine him to be a hoarder.
Ugh. Ugh. Well, that's the story. Sorry, you guys.
Fuck you.
Yeah, that's fair. That's earned.
Fuck you, Quinn.
That's totally earned.
At least in my story, the bad guy died. I don't like... the bad guy died in mine.
Not mine. And I think he was like, can I get out of this institute and go dig up the girls? And they were like, no. And like, the parents
the
were like, you cannot let
so
that guy out. But I feel like he had like, whatever. I don't know. I keep wanting to call it like appealing, but I think it'd be like up for.
Up for parole.
And I don't know if he's out. Like, I don't know the truth about Anatoly. No,
he can't be out.
Right.
There's no way. In Russia. Are you kidding? Shit. There's bleak.
Okay.
But maybe
good.
They'll want him out. Maybe they'll want him out to like scare. Like maybe he's like a like the. Ugh, so gross. But I do like there is a different type of offender, right? There are the people we've talked about this with serial killers. It's like there are the people that abuse bodies after death. And there's people that like get off on torture. And like this is incredibly sadistic behavior. But like, again, you had said it's like I'm so these bodies were not occupied by the souls in which we are mourning. But the poor families is what.
Imagine how mad you are, though, if you're a ghost and you're like, what the fuck are you doing with my body? Put that back.
Yeah, I hope his ass is haunted. I hope that guy is haunted. Haunted for perpetuity. Haunted in perpetuity.
Yeah.
I got to go reconstitute my appetite. And
right.
you got to go to a human trafficking seminar. So let's, I mean, what it, do you think you want to bring this up and ask them the
yeah, I'm gonna ask
sort of like,
it.
Hey, I just have a
quick
before
question.
We get started, can I have a quick question?
Have you guys heard of Anatoly, the Russian doll maker?
Could you imagine in the Zoom, there's a little hand, the little wave, the little.
My God.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I do like that too of asking, going, can I ask a quick question?
Quick question. Oh, God.
Yeah, just like a quick little question, just like a teeny tiny little quick
and then what
question.
If I told as long as I told to you,
I know.
I'm
know
like
that
okay
what
quick
happens.
Question so Anatoly graduated. Graduated from Moscow really U.
And the thing is do it at the top. So like there's no rules set at the jump. So it's like people don't know what's happening. And so you just keep talking and the professor doesn't know how to jump in. You know what I mean? Like there, I just think that
no pause, no pause for air,
no pause for the pause. No,
run
no,
on
no.
sentence.
So there's this guy, he was just, and he's did. I really like that. That would be a very fun. If you could do that and film it, I would love to watch it.
I'll try.
Thank you. Oh, God, fingers crossed. That would be amazing.
I'll tell you how it goes.
Oh, can't wait.
Later, bye. Team.
Bye, dear readers.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at rinse.com. That's R-I-N-S-E.com.